a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Java Lindberg. The headlines we're tracking at this hour. Probe opposed. Beijing strongly opposes U.S. investigation targeting China's maritime and logistics industries. Consumer Insights. China's premier consumer products expo in Hainan wraps up, revealing key insights. Report card. IMF forecasts continued modest global economic growth, according to latest Fiscal Monitor report. Beijing has protested the U.S. recent launch of a Section 301 investigation into China's maritime, logistics and shipbuilding sectors. China's Ministry of Commerce on Wednesday said the U.S. probe lacks the factual basis and runs counter to the principles of economics. It misinterprets normal trade and investment activities as damaging to U.S. national security and corporate interests and blamed China for U.S. industrial issues. It noted that the U.S. has provided hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies to its own industries. Section 301 of the U.S. Trade Act is a provision Washington has restored it to respond to foreign trade practices it considers unfair. Chinese authorities are addressing recent overcapacity allegations against the country's electric vehicle and solar panel sectors. Earlier this week, while meeting with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Chinese Premier Li Qiang urged all parties to understand the supply-demand dynamic from a global perspective. Li cited the International Energy Agency's estimates that the world still needs more EVs and photovoltaic facilities to reach carbon neutrality, and China's EVs and other green products are needed to satisfy demand in overseas market. China's foreign ministry also said the overcapacity acquisitions are groundless and are merely an excuse for trade protectionism.
The allegation that China's overcapacity floods the world market is not true. Trade protectionism founded on overcapacity will not make one better, but will only disrupt the stability and smoothness of industrial chains, delay the global green transition, and slow the development of emerging industries. China keeps an open mind on industrial cooperation and hopes countries that make such claims also keep an open attitude, uphold fair competition, contribute to an internationalized, market-oriented and law-based business environment, and join China in win-win cooperation to promote more inclusiveness in economic globalization.
Now, for more discussions on the concept of overcapacity, we're joined by John Gong, professor at the University of International Business and Economics. So, John, what exactly is overcapacity? How is it defined in economic terms?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Michelle. It's nice to be here. Overcapacity is defined in the context of the mismatch between demand and supply. In a sense, you know, the market is producing more than what the market, the demand can digest. And I think this is essentially an issue about equilibrium. In other words, you know, if there is excess supply in the equilibrium, that's no way that can for demand side to digest or supply, other than, you know, maybe the price of the products drop below even, you know, some kind of a concept of the cost, say marginal cost. That's what's really defined as overcapacity. Now, regarding this issue about overcapacity in China, we know that at the aggregate level, there's actually no overcapacity at all, because the overall capacity utilization in the manufacturing sector, at the aggregate level I'm talking about, is somewhere between 70 to 80%, which is in a fairly normal range, actually. And this range is not so much far away from the capacity utilization level in the United States and European Union. So, you know, at the aggregate level, I don't see that. I mean, in some subsectors, you know, we can understand that there might be overcapacity, for example, in steel, in cement production, for example, you know, due to the slowdown in the real estate market in China, there might be, you know, some overcapacities there. And not just also overcapacity in the short run, for the moment right now. I'm not sure that this is a long-term phenomenon at all. In the what I describe as the sunrise industries, particularly the things being mentioned by Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen's visit to China, namely battery, electric cars, and solar panel. I don't see overcapacity at all. I mean, there's reports after reports that there's a much demand both inside and outside of China, particularly when we talk about address the concerns in the context of the climate agenda.
Yeah. And should the indicators of overcapacity be dynamically adjusted? And is the concept of overcapacity itself a fallacy?
Well, you know, demand and supply is a dynamic situation. You know, as the demand adjusts, as companies adjust their capacity, certainly, you know, we're going to see the overcapacity issue going to be addressed somewhat in the future, if it exists at all. But again, I want to emphasize that at the present time, when these industries we're talking about are at the early stages of development and growth, there's a huge demand for these products. I just don't see how it is possible that there's an overcapacity in manufacturing, say, solar panels. I mean, China's electricity composition still has about more than 60% is coming from coal-fired power plants. And we have the objective of transitioning a big chunk of that to renewable energies. That means solar, that means wind power. This notion, it doesn't make sense at all. And also, I want to point out that, you know, you look at the price for solar panels, usually priced in terms of dollar per watt, okay? When it was first invented in 1975, it was $100 per watt. Today, it's only 20 cents per watt. And during that relentless price decline, I think there's a lot of contribution made by Chinese companies because, after all, this industry currently is still very much dominated by, you know, seven or eight Chinese companies. And they made a huge contribution to make it possible at a price where many people in Africa, for example, on thousands of islands in Indonesia, for example, who would have never had access to electricity, now they can have access to very affordable electricity. And this is about bringing light to darkness.
Yeah. And what negative impacts could Western pressure on these Chinese industries have on global supply chains and also the global economy?
Well, I mean, I think what the United States is coming from is really to protect its own solar power industry. They probably doesn't want to see a lot of solar panels being exported from China. And to the extent of making the domestic manufacturers in the United States not being very competitive. I think that's fine. I think, you know, there are ways of getting around this. I think at the end of the day, this issue has to be negotiated at the two governments levels. I think it's a quite viable solution, in my view, for Chinese companies to go to the United States to set up manufacturing operations over there. Electric car is a perfect example. You know, Chinese electric cars have been investigated by the European Union a few days ago. China's Minister of Commerce, Mr. Wang, went to Brussels to work out some kind of a solution. And we know that Chinese automakers are planning to set up operations, manufacturing operations in Europe. Just a few days ago, Chery Automobile announced that it will set up a factory in Spain. That's a good example, a way of addressing this problem.
All right, thank you so much for your insights, Professor Zhang Gong at the University of International Business and Economics. Please stay with us for more discussions later in the program. Fresh data on China's industrial performance during the first quarter has been released. We take a look at some of the highlights. China's industrial economy got off to a good start in Q1. The Ministry of Industry and Information Technology released a series of statistics for industrial development on Thursday. Our reporter Liu Jiaxin has the latest.
China's industrial sector has seen a steady growth in Q1 2024. Officials say the total added value of industrial enterprises above the designated size grew by 6.1% year-on-year in the first quarter, 1.5 percentage points faster than that of the whole of 2023.
Electronics, chemicals, automobiles, and other industries have played a significant role in driving growth. Major industrial provinces and cities played a leading role as well.
Among the 41 major industry categories, Shen Zhengde says 37 have maintained growth momentum. The major industrial provinces such as Jiangsu, Shandong, and Zhejiang registered a growth rate above 8.2%. Consumer goods manufacturing picked up by 4.2% year-on-year, reversing the sluggish trend since April 2022. The growth of the information and communications technology industry also stands out.
As of March end, a total of over 3.6 million 5G base stations have been built. 6 out of every 10 telecommunication users are 5G users. The integrated application of industrial internet has expanded to 49 major categories of national economy.
So far, nearly 10,000 digital workshops and intelligent factories have been built nationwide. Officials say they will keep accelerating deep integration of artificial intelligence and manufacturing, as well as promoting low-carbon development for future applications. Liu Jiaxin, CGTN, Beijing.
Now to break down China's first quarter industrial output data, let's bring back Professor Zhang Gong at the University of International Business and Economics. So Zhang, what were the key drivers behind the industrial growth observed in the first quarter in China?
Well, usually we look at the GDP composition, it's agriculture, it's manufacturing, and it's service. In this case, I look at the statistics. It's very clear that the 5.3% first quarter GDP growth is mostly driven by the growth in manufacturing. We see strong growth, strong numbers across the subsectors within manufacturing. And of course, particularly in these sunrise industries, a couple of industry examples as just mentioned in your program. These are the future industries, they're sunrise industries, and these products are selling very well. Actually, back to the topic, we were just discussing about the excess capacity, electric cars. I keep referring to this example. A few weeks ago, Xiaomi has its debut event for the first car it made, right? It's the SU7, Xiaomi SU7. The car was sold 80,000 cars within an hour and a half. I mean, look at how many countries can sell, 80,000 cars during the whole year. Yeah, in China, it was sold in an hour and a half. And that's excess capacity? Come on, give me a break. It just doesn't sound like that at all. I mean, these cars are selling like hotcakes. So that's an interesting example I would like to refer to.
It's a beautiful car. I was really impressed by how they look and the colors, too. Lots of options. Now, how has the industrial sector adapted to current global economic conditions?
I think Chinese companies are fairly flexible and also very adaptive. They would certainly adjust their production schedules based on the demand they are actually seeing. I think people on the ground are actually much more familiar with what's the situation on the ground, and they would make their smart decisions. But I think it's an overall trend that China's manufacturing sectors are still very, very much competitive. And there's also a trend that they're increasingly moving their operations overseas, optimizing over the global resources and being closer to the markets. I think there's also a challenge, of course, it's going to be a political issue here over the long run, that too many manufacturing products coming from China will make the trade balance doesn't look very good from the other sides, from other countries' perspective. So I think it's a matter of how do we find ways to balance trade. Just look at the trade between China and some key European countries. Even we export a lot of manufactured goods. On the service side, the European sides are having fairly strong competitive advantages. For example, we have a lot of students going there. We have a lot of travelers going there. We have other services were being bought by the Chinese companies. That's all service exports from Europeans' perspective. So I think this is all basically a story about division of labor and division of capital based on comparative advantages. It's an old trade story. And I think even today, it still carries very much the same spirit that Ricardo was talking about hundreds of years ago.
Now, can we give us some insight into any significant technological advancements that have impacted industrial growth recently?
Oh, I mean, there are plenty of examples. You know, the application of AI technologies, the application of robotics, for example. We are starting to see more and more jobs being taken over by machine. I don't want to sound like a Luddite, but I think that's a fact of life. I was just talking to a taxi driver in the morning, and we joked that maybe he only has a career of 10 years ahead, and after 10 years, the taxis in China are going to be driven by robots. So things like that are definitely happening, and I think the society needs to adjust to that, and the labor market needs to respond to that as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. John Gohm, professor from the University of International Business and Economics for us. Still to come. China's premier consumer products expo in Hainan wraps up today, revealing key insights.
The Asia Pacific's largest consumer products exhibition is back.
Over 4,000 global consumer brands converge
to showcase their latest and most unique products.
We're at the forefront of China's evolving consumer trends.
To show you how businesses are leveraging China's rapidly expanding consumer market for growth.
At the China International Consumer Products Expo.
The fourth annual China International Consumer Products Expo has just concluded on the island province of Hainan. To learn more about the achievements of this year's expo, our Michael Wong spoke to Tracy Huang, Deputy Director General of Hainan Provincial Bureau of International Economic Development.
So, Tracy, talk to us more about the scorecard for this year's Hainan Expo. What has this year's event achieved?
I think we need to say that the expo was quite successful because we already received so many positive feedbacks from the participating companies and brands. Mm. So in the morning, we organized an event to award the exhibitors that have joined us for 4 years in a row. So altogether 42 companies have joined for 4 years in a row. Wow. And then we already have involved 36 brands and companies that would like to join the next expo.
Already?
So, yeah, okay. Very positive outcome. And before the expo, we've set the target of organizing a green, efficient, high quality, and impressive expo. I think all the aspects of this target have been achieved. We can see that the sustainable concept have been incorporated in the pavilion building as well as the product showcase. And then we can see that a number of matchmaking events have been organized in terms of country-themed and sector-themed events have been organized in order to let those participating brands to meet more buyers, professional visitors of the expo. Further beyond, we have attracted over 4,000 brands from altogether 71 countries and regions to join,
yeah.
But over 1,700 new products have been launched during the whole expo, and a number of lesser-known yet very popular products among those e-commerce shoppers have been brought from some key countries like the UK and Ireland and Spain.
Yeah.
So we can see many new and exclusive products on show during the expo. Last but not least, talking about the impressive aspect, we can see the whole island have been organizing the expo on the whole. Apart from this main venue, we also have 3 branch venues focusing on duty-free shopping, yachts and sailing boats, as well as medical and healthcare consumption. Those are the theme topics of building the Hainan Free Trade Port
yeah.
into a destination to attract those high-end consumption back into China.
Car and motorcycle companies showcase some of their latest vehicles and bikes at the Hainan Expo. They believe the event provides a great platform to better understand their Chinese customers. CGTN's Wang Tianyu has more.
The Hainan Consumer Expo showcased a variety of consumer products. One section that attracted a lot of attention is vehicles. The vehicle brand representatives here are not shy about their deep desire to engage with the fast-growing Chinese consumer market.
I mean, we are very happy to say here for the second year in a row, since last year was very successful. And by the way, we are very much linked with Hainan, because Hainan for us represents a good touristic place, joy, good food, nice environment, sunny days. And we are very much confident about the potential growth of the market.
As the middle income class grows, the spending behavior of Chinese buyers has also evolved in the past few years, making this market unique from other parts of the world.
I would say increasingly the Chinese consumer is typically younger than our consumer elsewhere in the world. And we have a much higher proportion of our customer is female in terms of the owner and the user in China. So both of those things score more heavily in China in terms of the demographic.
There are over 4,000 brands from 71 countries and regions attending this year's Hainan Expo. They all have one goal in common: to unlock the potential of the Chinese consumer market and pave their way forward. Wang Tianyu, CGTN, Haikou, Hainan Province.
The Xi economy, reflecting the economic influence wielded by women as consumers, has been a central theme at the China International Consumer Products Expo. What are the emerging trends shaping women's shopping habits? Our Zhu Zhu has more.
Well, for every three lipsticks exported from France, one is purchased by Chinese consumers.
This is a remark made by L'Oreal China CEO, highlighting a snapshot of China's Xi economy. Jewelries, beauty products, fashion show. This year's China International Consumer Products Expo also underscores the essence of the Xi economy. Well, what surprised me is that even in the traditionally male-dominated realm of sports cars, the number of female consumers is rapidly growing.
There are more females in comparison to the world average, not only in the super SUV, but also in our super sport cars.
As spending capabilities expand, what are some emerging trends in women's shopping? I found a jewelry booth teeming with many female consumers. This crown was once worn by Miss Czech Republic.
We use natural quartz sand and employ a series of processes including melting, purification, cutting, and inlaying to craft our crystals. Czech crystal is recognized as intangible cultural heritage with its value lying in its craftsmanship. Despite its luxurious appearance, it's actually quite affordable.
Cost effectiveness is key for everyday wear. Pricier jewelry tends to degrade over time. As long as it complements my personality and falls within my acceptable price range, it's perfect.
Even if a brand is well known, I won't buy it if its style doesn't resonate with me.
They don't blindly purchase big names. Instead, they prioritize value for money, opting for uniquely designed products. According to data from consulting firm Accenture, China has 400 million female consumers aged 20 to 60, with an annual spending power of up to 10 trillion yuan, or about 1.4 trillion US dollars, close to the total retail market value of Germany, France, and the UK. Zhu Zhu, CGTN, Haikou in Hainan Province.
Global economies are set for another year of slow but steady growth, according to the IMF's latest fiscal monitor report. The institution warns, though, that countries need to be on a path of fiscal restraint following big spending during the pandemic.
The IMF's annual spring meetings are underway in Washington, D.C. On Wednesday, the body called on global economies to adopt fiscal constraint in 2024. Currently, many economies are battling inflation and rising interest rates. The IMF predicts that the global debt could reach 99% by the end of the decade if fiscal interventions aren't adopted. The IMF says it's critical for countries to rebuild monetary buffers drained due to pandemic-era stimulus programs, as well as reduced economic output.
We in the fiscal monitor put the focus on innovation as a driver of output growth. We are of the view that the leadership from large players like China and United States is crucial for this global cooperative process to be successful.
Vitor Gasper, director of the IMF's Fiscal Affairs Department, noted that China is already making positive strides.
China can already put on record some important successes, like in the production of green energy. Imagine solar panels. China is world leader in solar panels.
In particular, IMF leaders highlighted the disruptive economic impact of this year's record number of elections, 88 around the world. In election years, budget overspending is a consistent trend. The U.S. holding elections in November is under particular pressure due to its loose fiscal policy, according to the IMF. On Tuesday, U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell warned that persistent high inflation will likely delay interest rate cuts. Poppy Mputing, CGTN, Washington.
Moving on to some other business headlines we're tracking at this hour. Data from the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication reveals that the share of the Chinese yuan in global payments by value rose to 4.7% in March, reaching a record high since last July. This increase in the Chinese currency's global payments share has positioned it as the fourth largest trading currency in the world since November. Oil prices witnessed a significant decline on Wednesday as concerns over a potential Israel-Iran conflict eased. The two leading global oil price benchmarks narrowed by over 3%. Analysts say that despite the drop in prices, general crude supply has not been significantly affected. Many parts of the U.S. have experienced modest economic growth since late February, according to a recent report from the U.S. Federal Reserve. The report indicates that overall economic activity has expanded slightly and on balance. Additionally, the labor market and prices in several regions of the U.S. have seen modest increases. And that will do it for this edition of Global Business. I'm John Vandenberg in Beijing. Bye for now.